Welcome to Scoliosis World with Dr. Morningstar, an audio podcast for all things scoliosis. And now, Chief Science Officer for Scoli Smart and Clinic Director for Scoli Smart Clinics Michigan, Dr. Mark Morningstar.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Mark Morningstar, Chief Science Officer for Scoli Smart, coming to you with our Christmas edition of, well, sort of December edition of Scoliosis World. But I'm going to talk a lot about Christmas, and of course, you know, probably the number one thing everybody does at Christmas, similar to what everybody does at Thanksgiving, is eat. Well, for those who have scoliosis, of course, there becomes a layer to simply getting together with friends and family, gathering around the dinner table, eating way too much, eating a whole lot of food we probably shouldn't be eating. And of course, what I want to talk about in this episode is just to really kind of give you some more specifics as to why this could be potentially aggravating your back pain. Of course, most adult scoliosis warriors out there know that one of the chief impacts of scoliosis on the average adult life is just chronic recurrent musculoskeletal pain. Shoulder blade pain, low back pain, hip pain, they all kind of tend to occur in the same areas depending upon each specific person's curve pattern. Well, of course, there are a lot of factors associated with pain. So, for example, of course, we know all of the natural biomechanical factors associated with pain. The leverage that's on the spine, the extra stress that's on the spine from the curve. And of course, those spinal muscles tire out quicker. So when that happens, of course, postural muscles are different than, say, my bicep, right? So imagine if I were to start to go to the gym and start doing a whole bunch of bicep curls with a 5-pound dumbbell. At some point, when my bicep gets tired out, my arm's just going to go dead, and I'm not going to be able to, fire my bicep for, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, whatever it takes for the muscle to recover. Postural muscles are different. Back muscles are different. Back muscles are also what we call anti-gravity muscles. Their chief purpose is to help you stay upright, whether you're sitting upright, standing upright, etc., and fighting gravity, hence anti-gravity. Well, those muscles are wired differently than my bicep. So now, if I'm sitting in a position that is much harder for my back muscles to maintain, those back muscles are going to get tired faster. The difference is, when those muscles do get tired, they don't go dead like my bicep did when I was doing bicep curls, but instead, they spasm. And when they spasm, the problem with that, of course, is that spasming hurts. It creates pain. Achy pain, sharp pain, throbbing pain, it hurts. The problem is, from an adaptive mechanism and sort of, an intelligent response, the purpose of the spasm is to help maintain the higher purpose of what anti-gravity muscles do, fight gravity. That spasming helps allow you to stay upright and keep sitting or keep standing, etc., but of course it hurts. So the idea is, if you want to decrease the chance that you're having musculoskeletal pain in terms of reducing the biomechanical factors associated with the onset of that chronic recurrent pain, of course, the number one thing you have to do is to reduce the stress and the leverage on those muscles. Hence, you have to try to improve the curve or improve the vertical balance associated with that curve. So, but more on the subject of today's topic is some of the other inflammatory metabolic components to that same pain. Now, that pain may not necessarily be caused by certain metabolic things, but those metabolic aspects can certainly dramatically increase the amount of pain. So, if I'm in a position where I am feeding in to an inflammation response triggered by that stress in the spine, of course, the pain that's going to result, because there's a lot more inflammation than there otherwise would naturally be, that pain is going to be a lot more intense. Because, of course, now you start to add in the throbbing component, which is what you normally think of when you have an inflammatory factor associated with pain. So, couple of highlights I want to do on this podcast is to go through what are some of those things that really, from a metabolic point of view, aggravate musculoskeletal pain and how to tackle those. So, for example, one of the easiest things to do, and of course it catches up with all of us around the holiday times, is body weight, right? Well, one of the old adages that, in fact, I heard it in chiropractic school a long, long time ago. A lot of people, you'll hear a lot of trainers and other people, you know, kind of rattle off a similar statistic. But 1 pound of body weight essentially equals about 3 pounds of force on your joints, or 3 newtons of force on your joints. So imagine why somebody even just losing 10 pounds can mean all of the difference between having low back pain and no back pain. Right? I mean, that's 30 pounds of force less on your joints, or on your low back. So certainly it's important to keep your body weight in check. I mean, there, you know, this whole idea of I'm going to wear sweatpants when I go over to Uncle Fred's house for dinner because, you know, they're going to have the best smoked ham and, you know, I'm going to, you know, eat my heart till my heart's content. And I'm going to increase a couple of pant sizes. Well, frankly, if you have scoliosis, that's just one of the worst things you could do. You keep that in mind. 1 pound of force is 3 newtons of force on your joints, right? So think of it that way. As long as you keep that in mind, it's easier to say, hey, look, I can't do this because I'm hurting. And I don't want to hurt that much more just because I was not making the best choices around the holidays. And I mean, think about it. Yeah, we're talking about Christmas this month and, you know, this particular holiday season. But the reality is, I mean, here in America especially, it seems like all of the holidays, what do? We celebrate with food. And that's somewhat unique, actually, to America. A lot of other countries, they don't necessarily always celebrate every holiday with a food-based kind of a premise. And so, you know, of course, we're right smack in the middle between Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, you know, so it's kind of, you know, food-based holidays for a lot of people. So just watch the body weight game. Second of all, let's assume that you are making good choices in terms of volume of food, right? Well, now the question becomes, okay, what am I eating? Keep this in mind. When we talk about inflammation, one of the, if not the single biggest hormonal contribution to the magnitude of pain, and in some cases to the just the onset of pain, is the amount of insulin that your body's producing. Now, people say, well, what does insulin have to do with pain? Well, insulin is pro-inflammatory. So in our body, insulin is made in response to eating carbohydrates. Pumpkin pie, apple pie, you know, on and on. I mean, I don't have to tell you what a carbohydrate is, probably. Any kind of sugar, starch, rice, potatoes, whatever. Carbohydrate. The problem is, the more carbohydrates you eat, the more insulin you produce. The more insulin produced, the easier it is for any kind of an inflammatory response already occurring in the body, hence musculoskeletal-based stress, etc., that's initially causing inflammation. Of course, insulin can make that inflammation surge that much more. The other part is, of course, from kind of speaking to some of the underlying origins of scoliosis, is that insulin signals the creation of additional fat storage. So you have to think of your body fat as sort of a, almost like a collection container for everything that your body doesn't need at the present time. So if I eat a whole bunch of food and I don't need those calories or those carbohydrates for calories at that point in time for energy production because I already have enough, my body says, all right, well, I got a lot of excess here. I need to put it somewhere because I don't need it right now. So what happens? Body signals insulin to be released into the bloodstream. Blood or insulin takes that carbohydrate, breaks it down into glucose, drives that glucose into your fat cells, fat storage collection container, until such future point in time at which your body needs that glucose out of there for energy, and boom, now we use it to shrink fat. Well, the problem is, as long as you have insulin circulating around in your bloodstream, it's more it's much easier to be inflamed on a constant basis. And B, it makes it difficult to lose weight. And of course, again, we create this feed forward loop, right? So we have this idea that 1 pound of force, 3 pounds of force on the joints. Well, if I can't lose that 3 pounds of force on my joints, I'm still going to hurt more, or it's going to be easier to hurt. So one of the main driving factors is to limit the amount of insulin that your body needs to produce on a day-to-day basis. For example, we do testing here in the office at the Integrative Medicine Clinic here in Grand Blanc, Natural Wellness and Pain Relief Centers. There's a test that we run called a 2-hour insulin response to glucose. And the idea is, a lot of people have heard of this test or maybe have had it done by their family doctor, or maybe their child's had it done by their family doctor, where, you know, they do a fasting blood draw on you. And of course, they have you drink this awful tasting, super sugary, clear Coke is almost kind of what it reminds me of. But super, super sweet drink. And then they draw your blood again 2 hours after you drink it. The problem is, on both of those blood draws, they're only typically measuring your blood glucose or your blood sugar level. If that's off, first off, it doesn't necessarily tell you why it's off. But B, even if those two blood draws show that your blood sugar is normal, it doesn't necessarily mean there isn't a problem. Why? Because your body has to very tightly regulate the amount of blood sugar in your bloodstream at any moment in time. Why? Because if you become hypoglycemic, you have symptoms. I can't see, I get headaches, I get faint, etc. My blood sugar gets too high, I have a lot of other similar symptoms. So your blood sugar amount is very tightly controlled as much as it can be. Over the course of time, if your blood sugar stays chronically elevated, or if your insulin has to be constantly produced to maintain a normal level of blood sugar, what will happen is your body will adapt and start to become less responsive to that circulating insulin, which at what point then we now start to get into the term insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is very key, because insulin resistance is where you start to incorporate other aspects of chronic pain. In terms of now, insulin resistance is one of the big drivers, for example, of polycystic ovarian syndrome, or polycystic ovaries, a lot of people, PCOS. PCOS is almost entirely caused by poor insulin sensitivity, carbohydrate intake. And so the problem is that spills over, right? So as insulin stays circulating around the bloodstream, you become insulin resistant. Insulin is not the only hormone affected by that. Your progesterone is affected by that, and even your estrogen is affected by that. Why? Because estrogen, when you don't need it, also gets stored in your fat cells. But if insulin is preventing your body from pulling fat storage out, or pulling things out of those storage containers, let's say, to keep with the analogy, now your body might be producing estrogen, but if your body can't use the estrogen, it's not doing you any good. So, and now all of a sudden you just keep accumulating this estrogen, you become estrogen dominant, and now, frankly, you become a cancer risk, because you're very heavily estrogen dominant. And we actually know through clinical studies, and we have a study actually pending right now in peer review, that girls with idiopathic scoliosis are much more likely to have a low progesterone level than girls who don't. And so the other kind of side of the estrogen dominance equation is that if your body is producing or storing a lot of estrogen, but yet not making a whole lot of progesterone, now you're just throwing that imbalance, and you're tilting that really in favor of estrogen dominance, which is the pro-cancer sort of foundation as to why it develops in the first place. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, somebody develops breast cancer or something else. So poor insulin control is really, in my opinion, probably the root of the majority of health issues as Americans, and probably, frankly, in most developed countries if you look at the data. But to bring that all back to scoliosis, of course, a lot of those things affect or are affected by scoliosis. We know hormones are integral in scoliosis, because their levels of production are a little bit off or different from people who don't have scoliosis. Not to mention the fact that Most adults who have scoliosis and seek treatment for their scoliosis, the far and away the number one reason they seek treatment is because they're having chronic pain due to their scoliosis. Well, that scoliosis, of course, is driving the pain from a mechanical perspective, but some of the metabolic undertones to that are kind of what really amplify that pain. And so it's important that if you're, no matter what kind of provider you're seeing, you need to make sure that whatever kind of a treatment plan you're participating in or receiving, that all of those potential factors are examined or taken into account. If you want the most complete odds of resolving or at least dramatically improving your pain levels. If you only address one of them, well, let's say as an example that if you could weigh it out in terms of the percentage of contribution, let's say somebody who's in a lot of pain, we find out that 2/3 of their pain is due to the severity of their scoliosis, but yet 1/3 of their pain is caused by insulin resistance, just to keep with the example. Well, the problem is if we don't address the insulin resistance, you're going to get a suboptimal level of improvement. You're going to get some improvement, and we hear it all the time. We have people who seek treatments, doesn't matter what it is, chiropractic manipulation, Shro therapy, ScoliSmart, an activity suit, and they get improvement. But if they're not examining these other things in concert with the physical component of the treatment, they're not getting as much of a resolution as they could be getting, in my opinion, should be getting. And so it's important to kind of hook up with somebody who can evaluate that aspect, whether it be an insulin resistance issue or I'll go into some other things here in a minute as well. But that is really one of the big key driving issues. One of the other interesting things in scoliosis patients that happens more commonly than the general population is the amount of digestive disturbances that happen. And when I talk about digestive disturbances, typically what we mean is that it seems to be that people with scoliosis or adults with scoliosis tend to have a higher percentage of food intolerances or food sensitivities compared to the general population. Well, here's the problem. Food sensitivities also trigger inflammation. And of course, that manifests in a lot of additional ways also. So first, of course, if I'm eating a food, and of course, because most people are recognize it, let's just say it's gluten. It doesn't have to just be gluten. In fact, there are a whole variety of things that people can be sensitive to. But most people have heard of gluten, so let's use gluten as an example. Let's assume for sake of discussion that I am gluten sensitive or gluten intolerant, but not necessarily to a level of like celiac disease where I become violently ill if I eat gluten, right? But let's say that every time I eat gluten, I tend to get a lot of minor symptoms, or at least what I outwardly perceive as minor symptoms. So I eat gluten and I start to notice that I get really distended, you know, bloated, or maybe I get a mild headache, or maybe I get really tired, or maybe I notice my hands hurt, or my skin gets a little bit itchy. Well, those are all subclinical symptoms of that gluten intolerance. But the problem is, because those all tend to be musculoskeletal ramifications, short of the fatigue anyway, that most people won't necessarily associate all of those symptoms back to the gluten intolerance. They say, oh, well, I don't know what it is. I must have ate something, or I'm just tired. My hands hurt, or you know, I got a headache, whatever, right? They don't necessarily, most of the time, they don't put it together. It takes somebody like me looking for that kind of stuff to put it together. So the problem is, because there's no overt sign or no obvious signal that they're connected, people keep eating the offending agent. So they keep eating gluten. The problem is it promotes this perpetual sort of ongoing inflammation, especially in the intestinal tract. Well, of course, that's inflammation, right? And inflammation, doesn't matter where in your body it occurs, you always feel it systemically to a certain degree, which is why I'm sensitive to gluten. I get an intestinal inflammatory response, and then I get a headache from it, or I get joint pain from it. You always feel inflammation anywhere systemically. So the job of somebody like me then is to say, okay, Let's see if that person has any objective food intolerances. So there are different, for example, you can run a stool analysis on that person and physically identify what kinds of intolerances that might have. Or you could do a blood draw and look for different antibodies to different foods. I mean, there are different labs that we use, Doctor's Data being one of them, Genova Diagnostics being another common one, Alitest being another one, that run food sensitivity and food allergy panels where we can identify those offending agents. Then that way, depending on, like I said, the severity or intensity of those, well, it now gives me the idea as to does that person need to avoid those things forever? Does that person need to avoid those things for maybe just a short period of time? And try, if possible, to reverse some of those food sensitivities. Well, one of the single most common reasons that somebody, or like an adult, develops a food sensitivity is due to repetitive eating of that particular ingredient or food. I mean, we're meant to eat a variety of things and to eat a variety of things all the time. We're not meant to eat chicken nuggets every day. We're not meant to eat mac and cheese every day. We're not meant to eat sausage every day. We're not meant to eat coconut every day. You're meant to eat a variety of things every day in moderation on everything. That's the best way to keep your digestive tract healthy, frankly. So that's another thing that can contribute directly to inflammation and pain levels. Another aspect, and I sort of got into it also, is some of the gut bacteria that are supposed to reside in your gut, most people don't have the right quantities of. So for example, there are bacteria in your intestinal tract that help you break down certain nutrients out of your food, that help you make certain nutrients. And then there are bacteria in your gut that don't necessarily help you or hurt you. They're just sort of taking up residence there. And then of course, there are bacteria in your gut that shouldn't be there. And in many cases, the bacteria that shouldn't be there, or if you don't have enough of the good bacteria, that also lays the groundwork for a lot of digestive inflammation. And interestingly, going back to, again, this was a study that was published before I was ever in chiropractic school. So we're talking, 22, 23 years ago, something like that. In a study of about 500 kids with idiopathic scoliosis, 3 out of 4 had a chronic digestive disturbance. And overall, when you include adults in that, it actually goes up from there. So you're talking, depending on the author, you got 2/3 up to 3/4 to 80% of people of the scoliosis population, let's say, who exhibit some type of chronic digestive disturbance. And there are easy ways to test for this stuff. You just have to get with somebody who's knowledgeable on how to test it. The other thing that I'll say is, let me give you kind of a list of things that you can emphasize during these holidays as far as things to incorporate into what you're eating, recipe-wise, ingredient-wise, that might help combat inflammation. I think one of the first things that most people, especially on some of the dessert foods or even in some of the main course dishes, depending on what you're having, but one of the big things that helps improve insulin resistance is cinnamon. Most people like cinnamon. Can't really get too much of it. Most people don't use enough of it, especially to be therapeutic, but never hurts to try. Cinnamon is a very powerful one that works to help limit insulin production. Another big one, and some people already do this. We do this quite a bit for patients in our office for certain reasons, but organic apple cider vinegar. Again, another good one, often an ingredient in certain recipes. But apple cider vinegar is great because it helps improve blood pressure, helps improve cholesterol, has some weight loss effects, but also very healthy because it helps you break down a lot of the nutrients out of your food more completely. There are certain times where inflammation is prolonged because you don't have the nutrients available to complete a repair cycle. So for example, let's say I injured my shoulder doing something. And I have a couple of ligaments in there that I sprained. Well, there's going to be inflammation present in those ligaments because the job of that inflammation is to stimulate repair of those ligaments in my shoulder. That inflammation will stay there so long as that injury is not fully repaired. And in fact, there's a Dr. Russell Jaffe who basically came up with this model of inflammation called a repaired model of repaired deficit. And the best way to improve musculoskeletal-based inflammation in that perspective is to speed and complete any lagging injuries that aren't repairing like they should be. So for example, certain nutrients that you get out of your diet, a lot of the antioxidants, quercetin, vitamin C, alpha-lipoic acid, which alpha-lipoic acid is another big one to help with blood sugar control and insulin production. But those things help tissue repair. And once that tissue is fully repaired, well, guess what? Now that inflammation has no reason to be there any further. So it's a huge benefit to somebody who has any kind of old kind of nagging injuries that maybe they had a long time ago. But the problem is in adults, for example, especially if we have adults who have scoliosis, some portions of their curves in some cases sort of become a chronic injury in and of themselves. And so the more we can try to complete that repair cycle as fast as possible, the better a chance we have of minimizing any intrinsic source of musculoskeletal-based inflammation. So a lot of reasons to watch the nutrients you're eating, add ingredients into your food. Like I said, apple cider vinegar is a big one. Cinnamon's a big one. Nutrients that you can take, supplemental form. Even our Scully Pain Plus that we make at Scully Smart Labs. Scully Pain Plus has a couple of things in it, Boswellia and fenugreek, who, their part of their mechanisms of action is to help with insulin metabolism as one of the factors that promotes pain. So that's one of the, I'm kind of proud of the fact that I formulated Scully Pain Plus, but the idea is it's sort of a multifactorial perspective on how to really manage pain from as robust of a perspective as possible. So something to look into if you're interested. Like I said, that's called Scully Pain Plus. But, chromium, vanadium, another big insulin resistance, blood sugar types of nutrients, methyl B12. Even in some cases, when we talked about the prescription side of things, there's a foundation out there called Life Extension Foundation. I've been a member. I was first a member a long, long time ago. But interestingly, Life Extension essentially advocates that nearly every adult age 50 and over should be on metformin. Metformin, of course, is a drug that's commonly given for type 2 diabetics, but its chief mechanism of action is that it helps improve insulin resistance. And the metformin is one of those few prescriptions that's actually truly a natural product. And the main thing you got to watch when you take metformin, however, of course, it does have the propensity to deplete your B12. And so, of course, you really want to supplement on that if you're on something like a metformin, or also known as glucophage for somebody who's not familiar with the term. But, of course, obviously, you got to talk to your doctor about that kind of stuff before starting on something like a metformin. But those are all options available to you. And I encourage anybody who watches this program who is in a lot of constant musculoskeletal pain associated with his or her scoliosis, take a lot of these proactive measures. Sometimes it doesn't take doing a lot of these to translate fairly quickly into a noticeable improvement in your pain on a day-to-day basis. Or if nothing else, maybe you still have some of that pain, but it becomes more tolerable to the point where now you can do a lot more of the things that you enjoy and the things that you want to do, whether that's, playing outside with your kids or grandkids or being in your garden or, going on that walk that you used to do, or you can't walk your dog anymore. We tend to take the little things in life for granted to the point that, you only miss them when you can't do them. And, for me, it's about getting people back to their lives. And the way we do that is to, treat their symptoms as robustly as possible and, in the most comprehensive manner we can, so that we get the best chance of providing a relief that is long lasting. It's great to have relief, but if your relief only lasts until your Motrin wears off, what kind of relief are you really getting? So if you really want sustainable relief, you have to get to the core of some of these issues. And a lot of people don't recognize that a lot of these factors can really weigh heavy, no pun intended, on scoliosis pain. Excess body weight, poor nutrient intake, poor holiday food choices. So all these things kind of lump and pile up on top of one another. And of course, the net effect is it just makes your scoliosis far worse. So there's a lot more to scoliosis than just treating the curve, which is why we say all the time, you have to take all of these factors into account. So Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year, Happy belated Thanksgiving for those of you who are tuning in. I didn't do a podcast right before Thanksgiving, so I'm just kind of catching up on my holidays here. But anyhow, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me directly, drmorningstar@scoliesmart.com. Check us out on Simplecast is where our podcast Scoliosis World is hosted. So I'll sign off here. See you guys next year.